Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets, like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barnsley here for the weekly Talkin' Footy episode, second Talkin' Footy of the season. We had a cracker last week on Talkin' Footy. This week, we got Matty Purson on board. Purso, welcome to your first Talkin' Footy episode of 2024, mate.
Yeah, cheers, Barnsley. I always love these podcasts. Good to talk a bit of footy, and especially with the All-Stars doing the Supercoach, a bit outside of Supercoach as well. So I like these NRL ones.
Yeah, I enjoy it as well. It's good just to chat footy and just, you know, basically have the pub chat that everyone's having and talk about everything that's going on in rugby league. But rugby league always delivers week on week. There's never a week where I don't leave stuff out to talk about because I don't have enough time. There's always stuff that I leave out. So we talk about as much as we can, but we need to talk about last round to start off with. But before we do that, everyone would have heard the betting partner of the All-Stars podcast in Picklebet at the start of the podcast that the ad spruiks the same game multis. Picklebet do have a special this week that I need to tell you about where you get up to $50 back for any three-plus same-game multi if one leg fails on the NRL. So that's gold. You can go for two anytime try scorers and the match winner, and if one of them doesn't come through, you'll get it back up to $50 in bonus bets. So pretty nice one there. And even if you don't like those same-game multis, geez, Piggle's got some odds this week. I'll tell you what, the Roosters were $1.67, and I love that against Penrith. With the second one, I'll just say, I can't believe the Cowboys are $1.76 versus the Broncos. Like, I know these games are tight, but they got Reynolds back. But get on $1.76. Sign up to Picklebet. Make sure that you use the affiliate code ALLSTARS. That way they'll know that you came from this podcast and take great care of you. Certainly always remember to gamble responsibly. Think it is a bet that you really want to place for gambling help. You can go to gamblinghelponline.org.au or call 1-800-858-858. Now, last round, round three. The first game of the round, the Penrith Panthers 34 over the Broncos 12. It was a pretty, I mean, it was worse than that to me. Like, I thought it felt like a 60-0 game, really. The Broncos scored in the 56th and 60th minutes, but, you know, all intents and purposes, it was all over at that point. I was impressed with the Panthers. I thought that they played really well, but the Broncos were obviously under strength, and Reynolds not being there was always an issue, having him on a longer-term deal at his age. Not that I'm saying it's a bad signing or anything, but it's always a risk that you've got. And then as well as that, they obviously had Payne Haas out as well. And without Haas, that forward pack just goes down by 50%. So that was big enough. But then you have Reece Walsh go down early on in the game, and he's ruled out for the game, but also now for a significant period of time. And the Broncos' reliance on those spine players and Payne Haas to get their forward pack going meant that they just could not compete with Penrith. Now, even the week before, I thought the Broncos were very poor. So I almost think that some of the injuries have masked some struggles the Broncos already had going. But certainly, you know, they could have competed a lot better with Penrith in the grand final rematch if those players were all healthy in there, which is a real shame. Because to me, obviously, any grand final rematch, you're looking forward to it. I think the Broncos were looking forward to it. I think the Panthers were looking forward to it. Most importantly, I think the fans were looking forward to it. And through no fault of either team, we just didn't really get it to deliver.
Yeah, I think as soon as you saw Haas and Reynolds were ruled out, there was always leaning towards the Panthers win and probably comfortably, really. Probably not as comfortable as what happened on the end. I mean, Cleary had another blinder. It was an absolute masterclass from him. But the whole side, well, Isaiah Yeo is extremely underrated in what he does in that side. He's he was outstanding again. He started this year on fire. But, yeah, when Walsh went off early, that was pretty much the end of any hope they had with Haas and Reynolds already out. It sort of shows. We'll see, like, the Broncos have come good and they're going all right, but you just sort of see the juggernaut between Panthers who have been there 4 years now in the systems, they got when a guy's out, someone comes in, they do a job. Broncos don't have that yet. Like, Jock Madden, no disrespect to him. He's no Adam Reynolds. He comes in, he's not half the player that he is. They don't sort of have that guys come in, step up mentality that sort of the Panthers do. And I mean, to be honest, no club does really. Like, that they do it better than anyone. Sort of the Storm sort of had that hold on it for a long time too. But that's where the Panthers are now. Like, the players out, someone comes in, they do a job. With most other clubs, even the Broncos, it's been second last year, they get a couple of key guys out and they really struggle.
Well, I think that it put the blowtorch on Ezra Mamm as well. And it's probably a little unfair for us to be too critical, but his form this year has been poor. And he did nothing in that game to kind of step up and say, right, I'm the leading man now. And realistically, before Walsh went down, he had to do that because Reynolds wasn't there. And he didn't do much. He missed six tackles. And he's not going to beat Penrith by himself, but he's just not doing enough. He had 17 tackles, 12 runs. And I just think that he seems to be cruising a little bit. I don't know whether the controversy at the start of the season has affected him or not. Obviously, the elephant in the room that people are loath to mention, including me, is it has coincided with the fact that he signed a lucrative long-term deal for the first time and his form's gone down. So, you know, I don't know what to make of it, but there's a lot on Ezra Mamm's back after all these injuries for the Broncos as well, and he'll have to show it this week for them.
He's that kind of player, though, too, though. I see, mate. He's not... Without a maestro at halfback, he's not that kind of player that can lead a team around. He's sort of second phase and sort of more of a runner. And he's not really a guy that's going to set the team up and lead the team around the park. So, yeah, I don't know. I can't see. I just don't see him as that type of player.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's going to be interesting how they go now. They've got Reynolds back, but have Walsh out, whether they can step it back up this week. A couple of performers, though, in this one were really solid that deserve a mention. Patrick Carrigan played the full 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And he had 16 runs, 43 tackles, 3 offloads. He was trying to make things happen. He didn't have a miss either. 43 tackles.
He's such a weapon. And,
oh, he's so good. And I've said all the time, like, you take Carrigan and Payne Haas out of that pack, and they are the worst in the comp potentially, and they're going to really struggle as a team. But that's more about how good those two players are. And Carrigan really stepped up. I thought in that type of loss, he was very impressive still. He's such a good leader for them.
Yeah, I love Paddy Carrigan. Wish he wasn't a Queenslander, to be honest. But he's such a wholehearted player. You know what you get with him every week. He just works his butt off week in, week out. And, you know, he'll go, like you said, go for 80 minutes. So he gets spelled for sort of 60-odd so that he doesn't burn himself out, but he'll go for 80 minutes and you just get 100% from him every week. He's such a leader. No, there was a bit of controversy about him getting given the captaincy at such a young age, but you can see why. And, yeah, he's just unreal.
The other bloke that's unreal at the moment, I think after you get 3 rounds of footy, you can start to make some assessments on players' form and team's form and where they're going. And I don't think that there is a better centre in the competition than Isaac Tungo at the moment. He absolutely killed it again. 2 line breaks, 2 tries, 5 tackle breaks, very hard to contain. He's making some errors and penalties, but you'd let him make as many as he wants if he's going to continue this form. He's a form centre of the competition for me. And if he keeps going, he could be the number one centre in the game pretty soon.
Oh, 100%. He's just so strong. And he's... It's scary to think this is his second full year in footy, pretty much. Like, he's got so much improvement left in him. He's so young. He's just so dominant at the moment.
And he was a second rower a couple of years ago too.
Yeah, and genius. So he's just dominating and running off Cleary. Yeah, it's a good edge to be on. But like, he's doing his own stuff as well. Like, he could be anything. Yeah, you know, Tungo. Like, I've really enjoyed watching him play so far this year. He just seems to stepped up to another level from last season. And he swapped edges too. He was playing left last year. He's playing right now in Brighton's spot. So he's certainly a super talent.
The New Zealand Warriors, 18-10 winners over Canberra. I think that it was a win that the Warriors really needed to have. Obviously a good matchup for them at home. It was also the first try assist, I believe, that Sean Johnson's had, which is pretty important. And Webster did come out a couple of days ago and mentioned that he was dealing with a bit of a niggle, and that's why Metcalf took over some of the kicking, and now Sean Johnson should be fine. But once again, we saw the first try of this one scored by Fanua Blake. He had another blinder, and, you know, two out of his three games at the moment have been blinders, and I was one who was not worried, but sort of hesitantly watching to see whether, with all the off-season troubles of him wanting a release and wanting to leave and not leaving and knowing that he was going to go at the end of the year, whether he would still be able to step up. But he has really carried them. Their forward pack overall has carried them. Barnett was great in this one as well. 15 runs, 33 tackles. He's now legitimately converted wholly into a front row forward. And the Warriors got the win that they needed. For the Raiders, Sticky was a little bit upset afterwards. He thought the Raiders were a little bit hard done by on some of this. How did you see it?
How good's Harris going as well? He looks pretty fit and playing good minutes. But I 100% agree with AFB, especially signing with the Sharks. He had such an outstanding season last year. And then the last season he had at Manly was a really good season. But in between, it's sort of been a bit here and there. So I was interested to see how he came out this season and how he's performing. But he's absolutely killing it, probably the form prop in the comp, to be honest. Sticky. That's Sticky. He's always hard done by when they lose, aren't they? It was a game the Warriors were always going to win. They have been there and thereabouts in the first two without winning, so I was pretty confident they'd win. And yeah, they still look pretty good again this season, the Warriors.
Yeah, they do, and their defence has remained, you know, at the top of the competition at the moment. When you're having a look at them, I think they're around sixth or seventh in points conceded. Yeah, really positive.
Yeah, and that was the biggest thing that Webster brought to them when he came. Their defence just improved immaculately last season, and it's holding strong again this season.
Yep, and one of the things that it did show as well is that they still need to score points, though. And I think that they are missing CNK, and him coming back will help them, because whilst they're defending pretty well and they're keeping teams to pretty low scoring, they're not scoring a lot themselves either at the moment. They're not looking as dangerous, so that's going to be something to watch as well. Let's move along. The next one. We had the Roosters 48 over the Rabbitohs 6. And this is going to be enjoyable to talk about. Sorry, sounds fixed. I don't want to do the Captain Hindsight, but I did say it before kickoff. I thought that...
Oh, you could see it coming.
There was an inkling that this was coming. The Roosters have been in pretty red-hot form to start the season, and Souths have been in all sorts. And I think that some Souths fans might have been hoping that they might have got a response that might have rolled up the South Sydney team a little bit for the big guns like the Trell and Cody to step up a bit and sort of give it to the Roosters and certainly the forward pack. I wasn't worried about the game breakers, really, to be honest, Perso. As a Roosters fan, I was worried about the forward pack because it can become a little bit brutal. And whilst Souths have a lot of issues with their pack, in my opinion, they are too slow, they're way too one-dimensional, and they're all too similar, a lot of them, especially their middle forwards, bar Murray. It is the type of team that, if you get into an arm wrestle with them at the start, they've got the guys that have a lot of aggression that can start belting you. And that was going to be a bit of a worry for me. Obviously, we've had like the 7 or 8 sin bins in the past games and stuff as well. So I was like, look, I hope that the forwards don't fire up at each other a little bit, because that's when Souths might get under their skin, might be able to push them around slightly, and then the game can change. Obviously, it didn't happen at all. And the Roosters were superb, and Souths' problems were mounting even more after this game. The South Sydney Rabbitohs missed 36 tackles, which wasn't that bad, but they had 15 errors. And honestly, the errors that they have conceded to start this season are absolutely abysmal. You know, and that 70% completion rate, I think they were at 68% last week. They just aren't going to win games like that. And Mitchell looked very meek to me. He just sort of went, oh, we're losing, and didn't really seem to do much. And I don't know if Cody can. On the Roosters side, yeah, Dom Young, absolutely loving wearing the tri-colours jersey this season. 3 line breaks, a try, 2 tries, his 12 tackle breaks. Just absolutely killed him out wide. And it's been said a lot that they just don't have the speed out wide either, and I do think that's a big issue. Teddy had 23 runs and was just loving running the ball. Had his 2 tries, 2 line breaks, try assists. But really all over the park. I don't think there was a bad Rooster. And I don't really think that there was a good Rabbitoh.
That's pretty much sums it up, and that's why the scoreline you got. The Roosters are outstanding, and from the, like, I'm no Rooster or Rabbit supporter, but I always look forward to the Roosters-Rabbits clash, because even over the years, I mean, in recent years, both sides have been fairly up the ladder, but even when one or the other is not travelling that well, they always seem to live for that game, so you always look forward to it as an NRL fan. And South just did not turn up. They were terrible. The Roosters were ruthless, and Bunnies were just terrible. I I've got a lot of problems with the Bunnies forward pack. I think it's really weak. It's, especially their middle. Their outside backs, outside of their superstars, are probably some of the worst in the comp. So I think their roster's a little bit overrated. Dropping Ilias didn't do anything with Hawkins coming in. I mean, he tried his heart out. He played pretty well, considering. But, I mean, that forward pack just got dominated. So it doesn't matter who you put at half back there. That's not going to make much of a change. And Latrell's that kind of player that, you know, when it suits him, he chimes in. When the times are tough, you don't see him taking a big, tough carry from the back like you would a lot of other players. And that's what they sort of need. They need, like, when they're down like that, you need Latrell to just come steaming on the ball. Like, he's capable of doing. Like, he can pinball guys, but he just never seems to do it. Like, there's times in that game where he take the ball, he kick down, and he just palms it off to the winger to stand it, you know, rather than just tuck it under his wing and just run flat stick and go, here we go, boys, follow me, we're going. So I don't know what really is going on at the South, but they're in all sorts.
Well, there was one of those ones exactly where I really, like, sat up and went, wow, that was really bad, where I think they were down probably 18-0 or thereabouts, and it was obviously a bit of a turning point in the match. And Latrell's gotten the ball off the kick, and it wasn't the best kick, but he had a lot of time and space as well.
Yeah, is that the one where he spun around and just palmed it off?
Yeah, he threw a pass, I think, to Alex Johnston.
Yeah.
And it was like, mate, like, this is the perfect time for you to try and make something happen or to make a statement.
100%.
And it was really noticeable to me because if it's the same one that you're thinking, it was actually a pretty long pass and it wasn't a very good one. It was sort of a bit of a wobbly pass.
Yeah, Johnston got belted.
Yeah. it's stuff like that. It's bad. And then he got a sin binning in this, and I think it was well warranted. I haven't seen too much whinging about it, which is good because, I mean, look, it was clear as day that he was holding Latrell off with his right arm. And let me tell you, like,
100%,
Latrell is a strong bloke. You know, you don't need to hold very much. You know, he could hold most people with one arm and they wouldn't be able to move. So it was 100% warranted. It definitely wasn't a penalty try. It's silly to even consider it.
I was happy they got that right, Barnes. I was just sitting there watching it going, yeah, no, that's a sin bin, but please don't give it a penalty try.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, they got it 100% right. But that was another opportunity, per se. You know, as a leader, and exactly. You see this with forwards a lot of the time, right? You see a forward go off and they're filthy. They get sent to the bin and stuff. And on the sideline, like, they're ready to go 1-on-13. They're just ready to kill someone because they want to make up for it. And they're also angry and fired up. The troll came on and did nothing. Like, if you're going to show anything, come on after you've, you know, put your team down to 12 men when they were struggling anyway. Come on and lead your team back. Come on and show something. You know, show some heart. Show something for the jersey.
Yeah. There's something, like, definitely wrong in the DNA of the Bunnies at the moment.
I do agree with you, though, to give them a bit of relief off this game. I was listening to the broadcast and they were talking about how much Demetrio is in trouble here. And a lot of the comments were around, this is a top four type of roster. You know, other coaches would have this team winning games and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I keep hearing this about the roster. The roster's better than what they're performing, but not that much. Like, I still think they can miss the eight even if they play well with this roster. So I agree with your take as well, and it probably does.
Oh, it's a mismanaged roster. They've got all this money invested in their stars, but in between, there's not much. Like, they're quite weak in a couple of avenues, and they've got no depth.
No, the depth is pretty bad. And they've also got, like, a lot of good kids coming through the last 5 years, and it begs the question sort of what's happened. You know, Ilias hasn't performed, and maybe he's not going to be the player that people thought that he might be in his juniors, but he was a very good juniors player. They've got some other kids as well that have been very good in the younger grades as well. It just hasn't quite come through, but at the same time, you're right. Like, they've invested a lot in their stars, and I think the common sense says that if you're going to invest in Cody Walker, it's going to be risky because you got to pay him, and he's an outstanding player, but he's in his mid-30s now. Drop-off can be imminent, and he's looking like it now. And it can really put pressure on the rest of the roster if that drop-off happens. And you're always going to get it in that contract they gave him. At some point in that contract, he was going to drop off significantly. Now, you'd expect Latrell Mitchell to be able to step up and, you know, kind of balance it out, but he just hasn't. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Latrell. I think there's a lot of pressure in Souths to make changes. And that's not just changes this year. I think it's changes to overhaul the roster for the future seasons because they're on a path of self-destruction at the moment with the team that they've got.
Yep, there they are. Oh, their middle forwards are really weak. That whole Jack White signing as well on the corner he's on, like, you're not, like, he's just wasted in that 10-meter corridor down left centre, paying him that sort of money. Like, don't know, but we've had this conversation plenty of times, Barnes, but to me, I think Whiten would be the ideal 13 in that club. And then you have Murray and Colin Matangi on the edges, that all of a sudden they got the best back row in the comp.
Yeah, I think Murray's just so valuable to them in the middle. It's just, it's kind of like if you have, you know, Cleary and Hines in the same side, you're just sort of duplicating positions, even though you've got two guys that are awesome. But look, we'll see how South bounce back this week. We'll give them another week and have a look at it. I tell you who did bounce back, the Canterbury Bulldogs, 32-0 over the Titans. And I think probably a lot of people will say, well, it's versus the Titans. And that's true. The Titans have been probably the most disappointing team this season. They missed 42 tackles with a dozen errors. And they actually won the penalty count. They only conceded 3 penalties to the Bulldogs, 9 too. But I have to say, like, you've got to give some credit to the Bulldogs. I think that they've shown improvement. And I did say, I think even in last week's Talking Footy episode, I did think that the Bulldogs' litmus test was, you know, a little bit premature, where people were saying the first couple of rounds they weren't any good. You know, they played good sides. I wanted to see them play some of those middle-of-the-road to bad sides and see if they were the old Bulldogs or new Bulldogs, because the old Bulldogs generally would have been just as bad and it might have won this, but it might have been sort of a 16-14 type of win if they won it, whereas they sort of put them to the sword 32-0, and I think that it was good to see. I thought it was a good confidence boost. And you did see guys like Kikau become, you know, a bit more of a strike weapon than what we've seen in Bulldogs colours, which is good. And some of the guys like Karaz that have been there really step up in that centre job. I thought he was good too. But look, I think the Bulldogs deserve this win and they deserve some credit for it as well.
Their intent was evident from kickoff. They were like, yeah, you know, the Titans are terrible, but the Dogs were good. They completed well. They competed well all game. You mentioned kick out. He was outstanding, but it wasn't just what he did with the ball. He was his kick chase. He was the first down there and he absolutely dominated poor old Tanner Boyd all game, where he just got monstered. And that's what you want to see from those sort of sides. Like, yes, they scored some points, but in defence, they were so determined. They had intent. They were rushing up. They were chasing well, chasing kicks well. They played well. It was a good win for them, even though the Titans are horrible. But you can't take away the Dogs were just relentless for 80 minutes, really, with that intent. They just kept going and kept going and kept going. So it'll be good, something for them to build off for sure.
Reed Marnie was very good as well. Gave him some good attack and created.
I think that's probably the best game he's had in a Bulldogs jersey, to be honest.
Yeah, he's been a bit up and down. Like he still misses his tackles and has his errors and penalties. But if he can do enough positive stuff, it sort of outweighs it. And that was kind of this game because he was very, very good. The other bloke that was good, you know, they've got the guys, the staples like Preston and Wilson that have been coming through the lower grades that were both very good. Wilson has been quietly, I spoke about him last week, but he had another few line breaks, eight tackle breaks, you know, doesn't shy away from the work, had zero errors, zero penalties. He's been a very, very good winger the first month of the season.
He's an underrated player, Wilson. I like the look of him. I went to the Dogs Jooks game at Gosford last year and he was playing, and he's a tall lump of timber. He just gets through his work and he's unassuming, doesn't make any mistakes. He's there or thereabouts. He's an underrated player. But it's handy to have a guy like that backing up. You know, obviously the Fox will be back soon, so he'll be biding his time. But, he's a player of the future for sure, Wilson.
Had a game at Kogra where the St. George Illawarra Dragons hosted the North Queensland Cowboys. They lost 46-24, the Dragons, and it was quite a bad capitulation. Like if Flano still wants to talk about how this Dragons team is different to the others, then he needs to watch the tape of this game because this was quintessential Dragons. You know, Murray Talangi got the first try for the Cows, and then the next three tries all converted were all Dragons, and it was 18-6.
Fatala Mariner spills his lollies over the line. It could have been 24-4.
And that was, I don't really want to pile on RFM because the loss isn't because of him, but that's a bad error.
Oh.
And it's the sort of error that you get from the lower ranked teams. Like you get the attention to detail, the fitness stuff, and, you know, RFM lauded as this great signing and stuff. He's old and pretty broken down at this point. Like that's sort of what you get. And they could have been up, but they're not because they just don't have.
And then the opposition just turned and put the foot in the jugular, and that was it. It's gone.
Well, they just didn't respond at all. Like Zach Lomax scored in the 70th minute. But I mean, like, what's the good of that when you've just conceded 7 tries in a row? Like, It was just brutal to watch for a Dragons fan. And one of the things too is that one of the old Dragons juniors that couldn't get much of a gig in first grade and end up leaving, Reece Robson, just carved him up. He had three try assists and three line break assists. That's his record. Sorry, three try assists, two line break assists. He hasn't had more than three try assists in a game in first grade. Like, he just killed him. And then, yeah, guys like Drinkwater, where you just saw his class, where some of his balls that he was throwing, two line break assists, two try assists for him, scored his own try. But, like, he was just doing whatever he wanted in the second half. And the Dragons, again, I use the word meek, like I did with Souths. They kind of just meekly went back into their shell that last half an hour and just got killed. I didn't think it was very good for the Dragons, to say it mildly, but I worry for what that loss does for them for future weeks now.
Yeah, it's clear they can't play for 80 minutes, Barnsley. That's the thing. Like, you get to a lead like that, even if you're not a top side, you think, with you've got the calibre, well, you've got Ben Hunt at halfback and things like that, you think you'd be able to control the game and sort of at least stay right in it and maybe go down in a tight loss, but they just capitulated. Their edge defence just disappeared. I don't know where the Dragons are going from here. They're looking not a hell of a lot better than the Titans, to be honest.
Well, I was watching this game, Perso, and I said to myself, who's a player on this roster that's going to step up and lead them or change the momentum in this game? And my answer was Ben Hunt, and I wasn't really quite comfortable with that answer. And you shouldn't be if you're a Dragons fan, because Ben Hunt still doesn't want to be there, I don't think. And he's not changing any momentum of any game. So when you go through the roster, you just look at it and you go, you know, it's a roster full of guys with no star. I'm not even going to say Hunt's a star at this point. And when you're under the pump in games like this, or even just under some pressure and it's a close contest like it was initially and the team's coming at you, you need guys that can step up. You need guys that can change the momentum. Or you need guys that are leaders in the team. And I went through 1-17 and I decided that this isn't any in that team to do that for that game. I was pretty confident with the Cowboys coming home pretty solid.
Yeah, it's funny. You never thought the Cowboys were ever going to lose that game, even though they were horned. They've been looking, and that's one thing for the Cowboys side of things, but they'd be happy but not happy. Cowboys are nowhere near their best, but they're still finding the way to win. They've got the players in there that can get the job done. So, yeah, you look at that. The Dragons roster, you know, it's fairly ordinary, let's be honest. They're all battlers and journeymen, apart from one or two players in there. And then you've got, like, your stars on that side, like Lomax has always been a bit dubious to what his attitude is. There's always something going on in the background with the guys like that. And it's all on the back of Ben Hunt. But that forward pack doesn't name up. And the edge defence doesn't hold. He got no chance.
Upset of the season so far. Tigers beating the Sharks, mate. That was a good win for you guys, 32-6.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. I wasn't expecting it because we were pretty ordinary, to be honest. Pretty ordinary is probably a favourable term. We were pretty terrible against the Raiders in round one. I thought, oh, here we go again. Another long season. But the game, the Sharks, it's, the intent in that game, again, that, like, our line speed was awesome and it just held up all game. We completed at 86%. The kick chase, all those little effort areas, which I think is what Benji's trying to get in the team, were just was outstanding. They just dominated the Sharks all night. I mean, the Sharks were terrible too, but to be honest. They completed 67%, I think, they completed in that game. They're awful, but it's funny, in that game, we had the same amount of line breaks, which was 4. There was the same amount of tackle breaks, which was like 38, both sides. But the Tigers now scoring 32-6. So, but it's, I'm always a bit critical of the Tigers because they've been shit for so long. But it was a good win. Appy was absolutely off his head. He was outstanding in that game. It's something to build on.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I thought was really pleasing in that is it's obvious that Benji's message is getting through to the team. And that's something that I don't think Tigers fans have been too confident on for a number of years.
I don't think the players have been willing to play for the coach for a long time.
Mm. And you could see it in that game. Like, I don't think that the Tigers were actually outstanding. And I was talking about this with a few people where...
No, they weren't.
Like, you mentioned the line breaks and stuff. The Tigers were scoring points. Like, they scored one where they picked up an error and went over the line. They scored a couple of others because they dived on balls or got kicks. And
yeah, it's just Effort.
Yep, effort and attitude, exactly. Now, what you want to do if you're a coach of a team in any sport is if you don't have star players, you need to win on effort and attitude, because if you can outwork the opposition, you can beat star players with a team that all works together and is all putting in the effort. And that's what happened. Like, the Sharks' effort was not there. Guys like Hines were disappointing. They didn't step up, and no one else helped him outside of him either.
There was that case in point was when Appy and Hines were going for the ball, and Appy sort of nudged the way and got it, you know, and Appy had gastro. He spewed on the field.
Yeah, exactly. And that's effort. And that's leadership as well.
And that's your captain leading the way. So, of course, the boys are going to follow. There's a lot to like about the effort.
There is. And, like, they're not going to beat the best teams in the comp. They're probably not going to beat the top five or six teams in the comp.
We won't make the top eight this year, but at least it's a good move forward from where we've been.
Yeah, and look, as long as you're competing, like, and I think that's what fans want too. Like, a lot of fans can be realistic. And it's like, if you're going to lose to Penrith 20-10, you're happy with that, but you don't want to be losing 60-0 and having guys throw up a terrible effort. Like, if the Tigers play that way every week, everyone can be proud of them, including the players, and they're still going to lose a heap of games, but it's not going to matter too much because it's something to build on. And then once you get that culture going and you start to add pieces, whether that's young guys coming through and becoming good NRL players or guys that they've already got in the team improving, and then you add a star in there, one or two, like Luai's coming and so forth, then all of a sudden you've got the framework for a team that's in the top eight. But you can't just add players and just expect that to happen. You have to get the attitude right. And that is the blueprint of it.
Tigers have been trying to do for years. That's what they do, try and buy a player like the little Mitch Lure and Adam Blair. Like, they've just been trying to buy players and nothing's happened. And now we've got a good bunch of juniors coming through, and we haven't really... We picked, like, Abby was a great buy, but outside of that, it's sort of just... looking at guys that can fit into a mould, and Benji's there. Obviously, they have the respect for him, so there's a little bit to like about it. But, no point getting carried away, that's for sure. Even with Parramatta with a few out this week, still a big curse.
The Shark side of things, I'm not going to make excuses. I thought they were really poor, but there is...
They're hammered with injuries.
Yeah, the silver lining is they've already got a reasonably average forward pack. They got Nicora out already, and their middle forwards...
they lost Hunt in the warm-up.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so the middle forwards have been an issue forever. Like I've said for ages, they need a spine star to put with Hines, and they need a front row alpha that's a proper starting front row in the NRL. They've got that AFB, but he's coming next year. So all of a sudden, you got your LA out, you lose Hunt, you lose Finucane as well to a broken eye socket and a couple of different head clashes. And there's no middle forwards there. Poor Tommy Hazelton tried his heart out, but he was gassed, as was the whole pack. And unfortunately, like when you're a half, like Hines, when your forward pack is that gassed and you don't have subs and you're getting rolled in the middle, it's very, very difficult to make much happen.
Game over in that situation. Oh, look, Tommy Hazen, there's a lot to like about him, but he's like a 40-minute prop. He's not anything more than that. He tries his heart out, does his meat and potatoes, runs and tackles all day. But yeah, but their forward pack is very mild in the middle. I think Finucane's been past it for a while now. And I think his signing was more to get a bit of culture into the club when they got him, more than relying on what he's doing. And so they got a lot of problems in the middle. And I mean, it's pretty hard for, as you said, for the backs to do anything when the middle's just getting dominated. But I can't see the Sharks making the eight this season.
I think that they will. I don't see them making like the top four. But certainly, you know, seventh or eighth, I can see him getting there. And I'm still confident enough that Hines will turn around his season from so far. But I think that it's interesting. They've put Talakai to the pack this week to put in Iroh at the centres. Nicora comes back next week, and I think most people expect, you know, Talakai to go back to the centres.
I think he'll go to the bench.
Yeah, he might go to the bench, but I'd consider the bench to use him as a middle forward rather than an edge player. But you could almost start him at prop.
He'd be better suited there in that side, 100%.
Yeah, and if Talakai's starting at front row, you've got ULA back, you've got Hazelton, and obviously Nicora comes back to that edge spot, all of a sudden the pack looks a lot better. And I don't think you're going to lose heaps in the centres. I guess the thing to take away from it, though, is, you know, up until this game, Talakai has been a destructive beast at centre for the first two rounds. He's been killing it as a centre.
He has looked good, yeah. But the side's too reliant on Nico. That's the problem. This Nico and Trindle combination is not really working. It's sort of hindering Nico's game. And then Kennedy chimes in at the back on the sweep plays and stuff. He doesn't really create a lot for himself. So everything's still on Nico. And Braley is a good hooker, tackles all day, but he hasn't got much attack anymore, though. So I just don't know where it's all coming. They need to sort the spine out. It doesn't matter what they shuffle around everywhere else. It's not working at the moment.
I've said it too many times, but I would have really liked to have seen them throw some money at Ezra Mamet. I'm not going to go into it too much, but they needed somebody like that, somebody better.
Oh, that'd be a perfect option with Hines, someone who's got just a running 5'8 that can just play off the cuff as well, you know.
Well, you spoke about Whiten earlier too. Whiten signing would have made a bit of sense for the Sharks as well, but I wouldn't have wanted to pay him what South did either. But
nah.
Look, we've got to get to the game of the round too. Parra Eels 28 over the Manly Seagulls 24.
That was a cracking game of footy.
So good. And they always go at each other, these two teams. I thought it was fantastic, and it was definitely the standout for me.
Yeah, I admit, there's lots of errors, Nick. I didn't notice an error. There was errors, but geez, it was a good game of footy. It had everything. I think when Manly were up, I think by 8-0, and then it was the kickoff after that second try, and Cartwright came out of the line, just absolutely whacked LEA. And then there was another tackle, and he just came out of the line, absolutely whacked the next bloke. And then they've just shuffled it wide. Tommy's given it out to the winger, and they kicked it to, I think, Garrett kicked forward, and then Tommy came and saw the try. That three tackle set for 40 is what we should be showing to the US if we're trying to promote the game over there. It was just outstanding.
Well, Moretti came off the bench, and I didn't even think he should have been in the 17. He went out there, looking like that he didn't want to leave the field alive. He just had no regard at all. He threw some massive hits on him, and he was just bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, it was such a good game.
Well, I did. They obviously got some injuries out of this one. I think it was a win that Parramatta needed to have as well. They needed this win, but they've also got Moses, who had his best game of the season by a mile, out now for probably 12 weeks plus with a broken foot. So there's a bit of carnage for them. They had young Blaze Talagi in the centres. He's going to move to six, but he was quite good in this one. I thought that he had some nice touches.
Yeah, a solid debut, I thought. Not many kids are going to come through the game, so they ran over Tom Travoy, which was their first try in the debut game. So that's one he can hold forever, but he looks a lot like the customer.
Oh, I do think that Dylan Brown was a little quiet in this one. And I do wonder whether he's going to need to step up now quite a bit for them to be able to compete. Gutherson, again, had no attacking stats in this game. And that's been the tale for the majority of the first three games of the season. I think he's only got one try assist or something. It might have even be only one line break assist, actually. He's got to step up. I don't think that he's not trying, but we're just not seeing the attack from Gutho that we've seen in the past. And like Dylan Brown had a couple of assists last week, but he didn't have anything this week. And I also found some of the balls that he was throwing Sean Lane, I just thought, Lane was getting sort of blamed by a lot of people, but I was just thinking, it's slightly behind him, it's low, and it's just not on. And he just didn't seem comfortable. And that's really the first three rounds at times. I didn't think that Dylan Brown looked that comfortable. So I sort of thought the Parra played well, despite the fact that Gutherson and Brown didn't do a lot, which was good for them. But what do they do now that they've got to rely on those guys?
Yeah, it's interesting to touch on that. There's been a lot of expectation about Brown stepping up this year after missing 12 weeks or whatever it was last year for off-field discretions, but he looks like he's definitely a player that's got the pressure on him. He's not playing anywhere near as good as he can be. Gutho sort of always – it'll be interesting to see how Gutho comes in the game now that Moses is out. It's normally he swings left and right, and when Brown's out, he gets into the play a lot more. But now Moses is out, I think Gutho's really got to step up and go from left and right on both sides. But their forward pack's still sort of holding it. That's what's keeping them going. But the Earls are still, a bit underwhelming. It's Moses out for 12 weeks is a huge loss because he was enormous on the weekend.
Yeah, that's going to really hurt him. And I did wonder whether, particularly because of what we said about Brown and what we sort of saw that game as well, where the young Sanders was actually going to start as a legitimate halfback. I thought it was quite peculiar that they ended up going with Blaze.
Yeah, I thought the same thing because there's a lot of raps on Sanders. Maybe they think he's not ready yet, but So give Blaze a shot and see how he goes. But so that pushes Brown to seven, but Brown's not a seven. He's that sort of perfect guy that offer organising half. That's where he plays his best game. So interesting to see how it pans out this week.
Well, you hope that he's not going to lose his running game because it's the most important thing for Brown to have. But the Newcastle Knights, talk about needed wins. They needed a win. And 14-12 over the Storm, best way to do it. The Storm obviously have both their halves out. I was very surprised at the amount of people that were backing the Storm still. Like, oh, I thought that Newcastle opened up as the outsiders at about $2.05 on Picklebet. And I went all over it. Like, I loved it. They came in about $1.81 or something. But I was very surprised that the Knights weren't more favoured. The Storm, I don't think, can take much out of that. I didn't think it was a very good game of football overall anyway. 14-12, it was a bit of a snooze fest. And it wasn't huge quality, but I thought that certainly Pierce Paul has looked good in the second row. He was good that game. 17 runs with two offloads and 39 tackles for an Englishman that didn't have much of an off-season. Really good work rate. But Caelan Ponga, I thought, had his best game as well. And that's the biggest litmus test for how Newcastle are going, right? If they're going to win, they need Caelan. Had a try assist, a line break assist, but I thought he steadied the ship pretty well and led the side fairly well in a reasonably dour, not high-quality contest.
Yeah, I think KP's coming a bit of unwarranted scrutiny early in the season. I think a lot of that comes off the forward pack hasn't been as good as like they were towards the back end of last season. That and you've had too many halves. Like you had Hastings, Gamble and Colga and Ponga all on this field at the same time in the first two games. And O'Brien decided to get rid of Hastings, put Colga in there. I think that gives them a look. You just too many chefs. You got to have one way or the other, which way to go. And I thought that looked a lot better for Ponga, threw him up a bit more. But yeah, I Paul, he could be anything, that guy. Well, he's going pretty well for a guy that's only had a couple of games in the NRL and didn't have much of an off season. So he's definitely an exciting player to watch.
So before we move along, we need to take a quick break to introduce you to a brand new partner of the NRL All-Stars podcast, Bonus Bank. You can go to www.bonusbank.com.au today to check them out. Sign up for free or go straight to a paid plan to access all the different benefits that Bonus Bank has. But basically, Bonus Bank is Australia's number one match betting website. So it's not gambling. It provides a profitable side hustle for anyone who likes their betting by taking advantage of promotions and bonus bets that you can make, giving you a risk-free, tax-free income every week. So Bonus Bank has software and calculators that do all the work for you. It's semi-automated and it compares over 90 bookies across Australia as well to give you information on all in one place. It's also got its own app that you can do it on. It's also got several other features like betting and bonus calculators, tutorials and free education on how to make money from the bookies, Australia's biggest match betting Discord community you get to join as well, odds match software, full customer support, and a whole heap more. There's so many benefits, it's crazy. So if you want to compare offers and promos all in one place across bookies and learn how to make some extra income through the bookies in Australia, then Bonus Bank is well worth a try. Go and sign up today with a range of their plans. You can go completely free just to trial them, or you can go straight to a paid membership, and the different membership tiers will give you a whole heap of different features that are well worth it because, look, you get the money back anyway with the profits that you'll probably make. So sign up by referencing All Stars as your code on the site and you'll get a special sign-up offer as well for a membership today. Bonusbank.com.au. Go get in there. Australia's number one side hustle for anyone who likes their betting. Moving along the run sheets. We mentioned the Titans had a bad loss. The other problem with the Titans as well is looking at where they're going forward and how they're going to improve. They've obviously got some personnel problems, but one of them is that they've got David Fifita has in his contract around 10 get out clause. And, you know, coming into the season, I thought, look, Hasler was going to help him out coming in as an experienced coach. And some of these guys would probably be happy having one of these, a coach with the experience and pedigree that Hasler has and the accolades that he has. David Fifita could leave in less than 2 months' time. He could say, I'm out. And there would be a number of suitors for him, obviously. Yeah. And there's also some pretty unlikely ones too. I'm sure the Roosters will get bandied about. They won't sign him because of the plethora of back rowers that they've already got. But they've got money coming up. And people will laugh at that. But they've got enough players coming off contract where there's going to be money. If someone like Manu leaves on top, then there's huge money there. And there's a few other teams that are actually very cashed up as well. So David Fifita, could easily leave. And that's going to be a huge issue for that Titans side because he is a genuine superstar. And they've probably got two, right? They've got Tino, who's out for the year with an ACL. And as a big fella playing in the middle, he's got to come back from that next year, which could take time. And they've got David Fifita. And that's their stars. You know, you could have neither of them come the start of next season on the field and one of them never on the field again for Fifita. So it's an interesting point for Dez's early coaching career as a Gold Coast Titan. Do you think that Fifita actually stays? Where do you see that? And I have to say too, Perso, I found it crazy that they even let him have that in the contract.
Yeah, that's a bizarre contract, but it's there, isn't it? No, I don't see him staying. I really don't. Especially, like, it's funny you touched on Roosters, like, salary cap sombrero, blah, blah, blah. You've got Sualee, pretty much Manu, looks like he's probably gone. Jared's retiring. There's plenty of money in that cap. I mean, imagine, and that's a guy like Fifita. If I'm going to leave the Gold Coast, imagine going to a club like the Roosters. I mean, you'd go there for 200 grand less, 300 grand less than you're going to get from someone like the Tigers or Dogs throwing money here. So, I don't know how the Titans are getting out of this. Des Hasler came in. You would have thought he's always been a defensive orientated coach. The defense is shit. And it looks like he's stifled their attack. They just got no attack anymore. The Titans have always been able to score points. That's never been their problem. And it's always defense. Now they can't score points and they can't defend. I don't know. There's dire straits for the Titans, that's for sure.
Well, they don't have a solid roster. Maybe Dez will be able to get some signings there. You do need to see them with Fifita and Jaden Campbell back to see what they really like. But unfortunately, you're not going to see them with Tino. So
Tino out's a massive loss. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, it is. And they don't have a forward pack. They're sort of like the Broncos in a way. Like, their neighbours over there in Brisbane, their forward pack is really anchored by their two big players. And the Titans pack's built the same. So
he's got such a big role in their attack as well, Tino. Like, he does that much work, and he's a huge loss. And he's the captain, and he's the lifeblood of the club. So it's not really looking good for the Titans.
Moving along, Leichhardt Oval. Obviously, you're going to find this upsetting, but as a rugby league fan and as one for a number of decades now, I find it really upsetting about Leichhardt Oval's potential demise. So for those that don't know, like, obviously, Mims has rejected the West Tigers' appeal for funds for Leichhardt Oval. So Chris Minns has said, no, the government's not going to do anything.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah, it isn't a surprise, but the Tigers also have had some, I guess, opposition to Leichhardt continuing. Brent Reed has been very vocal about it on Fox and in the Daily Telegraph. And
old Peabody.
I look at this, and even just without a logistics or business point of view, I just go, look, what are we as a game if we're just going to throw out a history? And Leichhardt Oval is history. People have grandfathers and great-grandfathers that have gone to Leichhardt Oval and watched footy before. It's in the lifeblood of rugby league. It's one of those suburban grounds which we don't have enough of now. And there's a lot of good things to say about having some of the big stadiums, but you've got to keep some of your history and you've got to keep some of your suburban grounds. And I just can't believe that we're going to lose something like Leichhardt Oval with all the history, but all the support that it has as well. It needs some money. It needs some upgrades and things. Although I'll say, you know, like, I'd rather stand in line for ages at Leichhardt Oval and be able to buy a decent beer than have 12 taps that are all the same at, you know, a core stadium of Great Northern and nothing else. Like, at least you don't have you're not stuck with some of those contracts and stuff the big stadiums have. But it's got its own feel. It has its own soul. And you don't have that at other stadiums. It would be really tough on Tigers fans, but also just rugby league in general, if we end up losing something like Leichhardt Oval.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, you go to Leichhardt Oval on a Sunday afternoon with 16,000 to 20,000 people there. The atmosphere is amazing. And like you're safe close to the ground as well. So, I mean, it's since 1934 they've been playing football there. But not only that, there's a lot of, they play a lot of women's sports there. They play a lot of junior rugby league coming through. There's soccer gets played there. I think I saw something through the week that Peter Molinis is interested in buying it. Like, they're buying a lot of real estate now, the NRL. So if they were to buy it and then do a few changes to it so that there's that corporate side of it. That's the biggest problem now with and that's why Richard has come out and said, you know, we can't sustainably play at Leichhardt every week because there's no corporate. So, you know, they lose money playing there. That's why the Bulldogs only play at Belmore one time a year because there's no corporate facilities, so they lose money by playing there. And that's what it's all about these days. But you can't take away that nostalgia, surely. I think the Landys, you know, if they buy it and they spend X amount of money on it and do up a bit, but you can market it. It's not only the Tigers because there's a lot of other sport that play there, so there's still a place for it. But you know, it's prime real estate too, Marzi. That's the catch 22.
There has been some people against the NRL dipping into their pockets to invest in it, but I don't see any problem with it. Do you see a problem with it?
I'm 100% behind it. That'll keep it. If the NRL, like, they're finally starting to buy up in real estate, which is, you know, I don't know why it's taken so long for them to do, but they've finally got a real estate portfolio, and why not Leichhardt Oval? It'll ensure Leichhardt Oval stays Leichhardt Oval for many purposes of sport. But yeah, I mean, that's a no-brainer for me. If the Lennies and the NRL want to buy it and the Inner West Council want to sell it to them, go for it.
Yeah, and I don't see it as being unfair to the other clubs either. Like, why invest in blocks of units when you can invest the same money at the same sort of return and actually help out the game that you're managing? Like, the NRL's job is to make sure that the NRL and rugby league thrives. And if you've got something that's going to take away from that, then it's your job to fix it. And if it means investing money, it means investing money. And I also think it means investing expertise. And if any club's in trouble, like financially or otherwise, the NRL always is going to be where the buck stops because they need all those teams being successful. And that brings me to the last point with them. You know, the Tigers are a team that hasn't been successful. And one of the things that helps out those teams, every team's slightly different. Every club's slightly different. One of the things I think the Tigers has going for it is that those crowds they get at suburban grounds like Leichhardt that they have, it is an immense positive for them. It's a big leg up that team gets that maybe if you're a bigger club, you don't get, like South playing at a core. They don't get that same sort of vocal leg up from the crowd. They don't get that same sort of atmosphere. And this is a struggling club. Like, they need a hand. Just as such, if you had a struggling club that was out of money and needed a handout, the NRL has done and helped that out before. So I don't really understand why people are so much against it or think that it's not in the NRL's wheelhouse to do this type of thing.
No, I got no idea. It's, at the end of the day, the NRL wants to promote the game as well. You can promote that, you know, packed house at Leichhardt Oval and all your pre-season, all your advertisements, and you know, especially when they're trying to jump into the US market as well, or all that stuff goes towards it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how it's not a win-win situation for rugby league.
And if the Tigers make more money, the game makes more money, or the NRL makes more money. So, I mean, there's that. That's as right. Well.
And if the NRL own the ground, then they're making money off the Tigers getting their money from the corporate sponsors and everything else.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Reece Walsh re-signs with the Broncos. 5 years.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. He said, I haven't signed it. So Reece Walsh has agreed.
They've agreed to terms, but there's no signature.
I always hate this stuff. Like, why bother coming out and saying, no, I haven't? Like, just why bother?
Yeah, I don't know.
Even if you just say nothing. But anyway, it's 5 years, over 5.5 million, 1.2 million a year, basically. It's a lot of money. Obviously, the Broncos had to do it. Like, they had to re-sign Reece Walsh. Well done to them. The fans are happy. The Broncos are set for the future, particularly when you look at, you know, Reynolds needing to retire in the short term, and also the build of that roster and team. Makes complete sense that they gave it to him. I'm going to just be a bit devil's advocate here because I was very surprised at some of the takes on NRL 360 about it and on Fox Sports in general, where they're like, he's earned that money. He's actually come in for a pay cut. And I was like, hang on, a pay cut? Look, I think Walsh is great. He's got his best football ahead of him. But we have only seen one season out of him like this. And often, I've spoken about it before, it's very hard to follow that great season up and be just as successful. So we will see this year how he follows it up. But I make no mistake, it is a big investment and there is some risk. 5 years is a long time for someone young who has just had one breakout season. And you're paying him up there as one of the top 10 paid players in the game. You know, there is risk there. And I actually think that it was overstated how many teams would actually be paying him that money on the market. You know, you'd certainly get a couple on the bottom that might be looking at 1.4 million or 1.2 million, but I do think that's at the higher end. Like, I tend to think that he's more of a million-dollar player if you're going to give him a five-year deal if you're looking at some of the other top teams. So I did think that it was quite a lot of money to spend, whereas others have sort of thought, well, actually, it's value. Where did you sit on it?
Yeah, it's sort of in between. I think the Broncos are looking at it as we're getting from 1.1 now for 5 years. In 5 years' time, he might be, you know, 1.8. So they're sort of investing in the talent and the bargain sort of things there. But I totally agree. Well, he had a brilliant season last year. But that was a world away from anything else he's ever produced. So to just say that he is one of the best players in the NRL and going to be that way every year to fork out that sort of coin is a big gamble. It's a good deal for Walsh. That's why I don't understand why. And he wants to stay in Brisbane as well because, you know, his kid's there and he's separated from his ex that he had the kid with and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know why he's playing the game of, well, have it signed. Take the money at that age. Like, he's that young. He's got his best football ahead of him. I don't think he would demand as much as what, you know, I watched that as well. They're saying, 1.4 from lower clubs. So the Tigers have got Buller. I don't think they'd even bother offering anything to get him down there. So that sort of thing, you know what I mean? So, I don't quite agree with that narrative that he could go and get 1.5, 1.6 at another club and it's a good move for him to stay there. The Broncos are putting a fair investment in him, which is risk, which it could well pay off, and they could well end up getting a superstar player over the next 5 years. It's under what he should be paid, but it's definitely not how good is this deal?
I think there's a likely scenario that he's a million-dollar player, but that's still a superstar and one of the best players in the game. Like, this is the thing. Right. Like, he's just got such a big thing to live up to now. And obviously, it's great for Walsh. Like, take the money, well done to you, and you've earned it last year.
Look how that pressure went from Milford and Taylor.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a long list of players who have had a really good season and just have never been that good again. And for him, like, if he's 80% that good, he's still a star and he's still playing amazing, but it's like a $900,000 to $1 million player. And I just hope that that doesn't put the Luke Brooks pressure on him if that sort of happens, you know, because Brooks, he just 100%. Got smashed by the contract that he had. And it was a little bit unfairly. He bit of both. He didn't live up to it, but he also wasn't as bad as what people were hounding him for. And, you know, it was a contract that was offered to him. I think that Walsh could end up being a million-dollar player over the next 5 years and being 20%, you know, less, but that's fine.
He could quite easily be one of the top five players in the NRL for the next 10 years, but it's still a risk, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the top players are paid 1.4, 1.5. That's the top pay package in the game. It's pretty big. He might live up to it. He's got the potential to. And he's certainly young enough where he's got enough improvement in him where he might get there. I hope he does for rugby league purposes. But for a big club like the Broncos, I wasn't quite sure where I stood on it because, I mean, normally with the big clubs, you don't have to pay as much. And they've paid quite a bit of money and invested in him. But it was also a signing they had to make and probably a pat on the back for retaining him because I'm sure that there would have been a lot of people wanting the services of Reece Walsh next year as well. Going to be interesting how it plays out. Either way, they're going to get a superstar over the next 5 years, regardless. Positive pitch. This is the segment where we look at something positive in the game. Often it's certain things or acts and whatever, but I've actually just chosen a player because I'm just so happy for Tigers fans that I think they got someone really special in young Galvin. I've really enjoyed seeing Galvin debut this season. And I just saw it right from round one, but sort of every round now for three rounds, he's just looked like such a great footballer, such a great player, and just such a real blue chip prospect that I've just got a feeling about. Like, I've just got such a good feeling about how he plays the game, the effort he puts in, how involved he gets, and the skill set that he has. It's really great. And it's even better to see it come from a team that really needs it. Like, the Tigers have obviously got the recent spoons and stuff. You see these guys come through for the Roosters or for the Storm or, you know, for the Broncos and some of these other, you know, top clubs. And it's like, that's great. And you love seeing it from any youngsters coming through that become stars. But it's even better when it's, you know, one of the bottom teams because they really need that boost. And I just love watching Galvin play. I think that he looks like he could be really special.
As a Tigers fan, hello. But he's had massive raps coming through the juniors. He's ticked every box, Australian schoolboy, rep level and stuff. But his temperament and his effort levels, since I watched these first two games of first grade, he just looks like a player. He really does. He did that first game. He was just everywhere, trying to get involved as much as he could. He just everything. So, and he's a good defender too. Well, he's a big body for an 18-year-old at 5'8". So, like, the players aren't running over him. Well, they're going to get targeted, and he's going to. But they're not running over him. So he does his defense as well. But in attack, he just sort of. He's already starting to link up with Buller as well in the game against the Sharks. So in the second game of first grade, and it's a bit of a combination of that left edge. He just looks a really likely customer, which is great.
Spray of the week. Look, you're going to have to give me 3 or 4 minutes per so, because I'm going to absolutely unload here, and there's a lot to cover with this. I've gone pretty broad and general in this one, everyone. The NRL doesn't even know their own rules. And I'm just going to absolutely unleash here, because I've been simmering the entire season. I was really looking forward to this season. I thought that Vegas was fantastic. I thought we started off great. And it was great. Yeah,
how good was that?
And it's kind of fizzled for me. And I don't think it's been a great 100%. Opening month of footy overall. And one of the biggest things that has strangely flown under the radar is I normally see this in the media a lot more, and for some reason they've stepped back a little bit. There has been so many bad decisions to start this year, and so much of it comes up to the NRL and what they've been doing. The rule changes have been terrible. Like, there is no reason to keep changing this many rules. Under the Volandis and Abdo administration, we have never had as many rule changes to the game as what we have had, ever. And we just keep doing it every year. And one of the things that I hate is when there's double talk about it. So this year they came in and said, look, we're not going to make many rule changes. One of them was a downtown rule. Never needed a change, by the way. But it's double talk because they say this is only rule change, but then they change interpretations and criteria. And it's a roundabout way of changing rules. And it absolutely sucks. And it is just another way to change rules. And why don't we get any consistency from officials? Because they're on a hiding to nothing. You might only have two new rule changes, but you've got 10 different interpretations and stuff that are getting thrown out there that they have to do. No wonder it's going all sideways every which way. We've got a number of really bad calls. I'm going to list a few of them that I really hated recently. The May head clash, 100% a head clash, 100% an accident. The MRC, the match review committee, 100% got it right, and I was so pleased that they did. That was 100%. An accident.
If he got suspended for that, fair dinkum, that would have done me.
Well, the MRC came out and said with this one that it was not reckless and not careless. And I 100% agree. It is
he just went to tackle him and they clashed heads.
It is a normal action on a rugby league field. And I couldn't believe the referee, who might have just been interpreting it from what the bunker had given him, but saying, you've rushed in fast and you didn't bend your body. Now, there is nothing to say that you have to play it at a specific speed, and there is nothing to say that you've got to bend your body in tackles. And I cannot believe that Annesley came out and actually said that should have been, you know, a suspension. It's going to be in the future. If you don't want the match review committee to make the decisions, then make the decisions yourself. But don't give the job to someone else who is meant to be independent from you and then say, no, you got it wrong. Make sure you do it different next time. Next time that person's suspended. Make the decisions yourself then. It is just ridiculous and unprofessional, this whole Mayhead clash thing. Whatever side of it you're on, it's wrong of them to decide that the match review committee has done the wrong thing and come out with it.
I don't even think Reece Walsh decided May should be suspended for that. Like, seriously.
Well, the other thing that Annesley said, Perso, in this example, is that he said it is fraught with danger, basically, if you rush in at speed. It's rugby league. It's sport. What sport isn't played at speed? You're allowed to play at speed. The game is fast as ever, and you're making it faster. And you know what? You want a defender to jog up. You want a defender to wait for the attacking player to run at them before they tackle them. That had to be done at speed. Everything's done at speed on a rugby league field. So don't start penalising players because they're doing things fast. You're allowed to. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. But the thing I can't believe with Annesley, he refereed through a brutal time of rugby league. So his, some of his comments with this sort of stuff is like, oh, he needs to go, pretty much.
The May stuff absolutely killed me. A lot of people said he wasn't making tackle. The sort of tackle he was making was a ball and all tackle where he's wrapping. You can actually see his arm on plenty of the pitches, so there was arms involved. And he also tried to pull out himself.
Didn't quite get hit in the wrong spot. But like, what if May rolled out of that with it and didn't get up? No one would be talking about it.
Well, that's exactly right. And I made the point too that we have blood spilled every game. We have head clashes every round multiple times.
It's rugby league.
And none of them are suspended. People bring up Finucane suspension. That was 2 years ago. We've had 50 head clashes since then. Yeah, it's... You can't just say whenever there's going to be an injury, well, the defensive player has a duty of care. And this whole duty of care thing is absolutely ruining rugby league because it's a term that's just thrown out now to not have to explain why you're suspending someone. Because basically it's just saying this bloke got hurt and you're the defender. So bad luck. It's just rubbish.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
That's one of them, Perso. I mean, the Leo Thompson one, nobody said boo about.
That looked spectacular, but fair dinkum. For him to, and they didn't even contest it. They just took the week. He should have contested it. Surely he would have got off.
So the reason they didn't contest it is because the match review committee has now been so influenced by the NRL and Annesley that it has become too hard to win the last 3 years. And that is why clubs are not contesting it. And it has been said by many people that that's been said quietly behind the scenes. And that's not a good place to be at if you're the NRL.
Not at all.
Now, with the Thompson one, with people that didn't see, he's suspended now this week and not playing, which shouldn't have even been a penalty because what had happened was he's gone in to catch a ball. His eyes never leave that ball. And Pappenhausen comes and jumps over his shoulder and ends up on his back. And there's all these terms that have been thrown around.
It looks spectacular.
Looks spectacular.
Do you think if it wasn't Pappenhausen because of his recent injury history, do you think it was like another fullback? Do you think there'd be the same hysteria around it?
I'm not sure there would be, but I tell you what, the Turbo one on Tedesco where it actually gave Manly a try and there was no penalty, let alone a suspension, was worse.
Exactly.
Because Turbo pulled out of contesting that ball and still hit Tedesco. Now, I'm fine if that's not, you know, a penalty or whatever, don't get me wrong, but it's worse than what Leo Thompson did significantly. Leo Thompson went in to catch a football. That's all he did. It happens 50 times a game.
Yeah.
How is he getting penalised, let alone suspended a week? It is absolute rubbish. And you've seen this terminology coming out now about landing zone and you came into the landing zone but you weren't looking to catch the ball and all this rubbish. And it all comes back to these secret interpretation and rule changes. It gets sent to the clubs, but not shown to fans very often either, by the way. And it's just rubbish. And we had a kick out no try not long ago, a couple of weeks ago, because the ref got in the way. And Giga got denied a try. That's the first time that's happened that I remember seeing it. Like, we're just changing rules on the run that are affecting tries being scored, affecting penalty counts, and getting guys suspended for no reason. And it is also negative publicity constantly for the NRL. It all comes down to rule changes and interpretations, and the league does not know what they are doing.
100%. Like, we're, like, staunch NRL fans, but we get into it a bit deeper than the most. Characters too, and we're getting confused. So when they're talking about expanding the brand to the Stokes and everywhere else, how the hell do you explain this sort of shit to people that have never seen the game? It's just ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. I've hated it for a long time. I thought they were starting to get to a good point. I didn't really see there was any need to change any interpretations or any rule changes, but they still did. They just, it's like they've got to find a reason to change something every year for the sake of it. That's just, does my head in, to be honest.
Well, here's the thing too. The rule changes that they've changed never needed to be changed, and the interpretations as well. So,
not at all.
You've got something like the obstruction rule, and this is where I come up with, they just don't know what they're doing with their own rules.
Well, I think they finally got that right for a period, and then it's changed again.
Yeah, and like that actually needs to be fixed. So, I mean, if you're looking at rules and you have to change something, the obstruction rule has been the elephant in the room for years where that has to be fixed. And instead that they change rules that don't need to be fixed and no one says anything about. And it comes down to my final point on it, Perso, where if players don't want these interpretations and rules, and if fans don't want these interpretations and rules, then who are the NRL actually changing it for?
Exactly. It seems to be like they just need to come up with something every year. Oh, we've got to change something, you know. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. The ones they've changed this year have just been ridiculous.
It makes no sense. And if the majority of fans and players don't want it, then don't do it and start fixing the stuff that players and fans want, because they're the ones that play the game and they're the ones that watch the game. Let's move along, though, to something a bit more positive. Legend Rewind. This is a great Legend Rewind. I love this guy. Hooker from the West Tigers. All-time great. Represented at every level. Benny Elias. Benny was my favourite hooker for a long time. He still might be one of my favourite hookers now. I think that he probably is. He's one of the best hookers to ever lace up a boot for me, but certainly for the Tigers, he's an all-time great. Played 234 games for the club, 19 games for New South Wales. Actually captained New South Wales in six of those games, which I think got forgotten. You know, between 90 and 91, he was captain six times, and he won three of the six games and one of the two series in that period as well. One of the big memories for me is the Game 2 Origin try in 1985 series from dummy half. It was the match winner for the Blues, clinched it, and it was a big one. He was also, I think, a hooker that's a, very much a throwback hooker, but I loved how fiery he was, Perso. That was one of the other things. He got into Blues constantly, but wore his heart on his sleeve. Only a little fellow. He's only like 5'9", 83 kilos. But just how he played the game, he was ferocious. He niggled. He belted guys that were a lot bigger. And he was very smart. And I loved watching him play. I'm sure you've got to love Benny Elias. You've probably got some great memories from him.
But he changed the way hookers played. There was, you know, the sort of attacking hookers. I mean, the hookers didn't play the way that he played until he came along. You had your Mario Phoenix was still, he was a hooker front rower. Even your David Torellas was a hooker lock, Michael Porter and that from the Shark. The sort of the hookers just used to tackle and pass. That was it. He played like a halfback at a hooker. He was the first hooker to do that. He was outstanding. Like, it was just, his front row partner and blocker, like everyone likes to think of their blocker, has just been a knucklehead and a hard running prop and stuff. But he was as good of a ball playing prop as he ever had. So the Tigers, when they went through that good period in the late 80s, was all off the back of Elias and Roach. They were like they were more ball players than the halves were. He was just it was definitely a different thing to happen at the time.
Yeah, it was. He had Dally M Hooker of the Year, 1985, 88, 92. And the fact that they were so spaced out, you know, he actually had some great hookers around as well. That was a Walters era as well that he came into early on. And Rugby League Player of the Year in 88 as well. Dally M Representative Player of the Year in 94. He had a fantastic career that pretty much for a decade from 85. He was phenomenal to watch, and it was probably, you know, taken away. You know, he didn't have as many Australian games as what he could have had, you know, but some of that was because of the other hookers that were around at the time as well. But also one club man too. All the games were for Balmain, debuting in 1982 all the way to 1994. And he also was pretty durable. Like, he had a couple of injury-affected seasons, but considering how he played and for the most part, he was durable, and he was also really liked by his teammates and a really good leader, which people need to remember too, and that's why he got the captaincy. The 1989 grand final is obviously going to be one that's going to be remembered a lot, Perso, because that was a killer for him, and unfortunate that he lost that one. But that's still one of the reasons why, you know, it's an iconic game, and Elias was at the forefront of it as well.
Yeah, that field goal that hit the post, geez. That still burns, but that was an epic game of football, but that was it. He was at his peak in those times, and you know, the hookers he was against at those times just they did not attack. You know, Steve Walters was probably his biggest opposition, and he was a different sort of player as well. But just Elias was sort of a hooker halfback. You know, it was no one else had done it at that time, so that's why he was so unique. And then you sort of watch the games. Like, if anyone wants to go back and watch some Tigers games and from those days and see how Benny played. Robbie Farah was so close to Benny Elias when he came to the way they played. It was yes. Uncanny. You know, that played across and, you know, play with a halfback hooker. And I've never really seen too many hookers do that.
It hasn't made a lot. They've been able to do it at that level and that consistency for over such a period of time. And it was also like one of the other iconic moments that I remember from him is after the New South Wales Origin Series victory, He had blood coming out everywhere.
Yeah, when he had the blood and his mum was on the
hugged
floor.
Him, there's blood everywhere. Like
that was that epic series where Gore and Wally were going at each other. And yeah, that's nostalgia in it too, isn't it?
It is. And look, he's a Balmain Tigers icon. And whether you're, you know, from the West faction or the Balmain faction, as a club, the Tigers, he's iconic with the Tigers and just such a sensational player. And it was probably forgotten a little bit because of the hookers like Walters that came in at the same time, who a lot of people thought before Cam Smith was the best hooker ever. And then Cam Smith obviously rated as the best hooker ever. And even Badiris in the New South Wales jersey was outstanding. But unfortunately, Elias has gotten a little bit forgotten. But he was his own style of hooker, like you said, that was a bit of a trailblazer. And he was a tough little nugget as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, completely different to anyone else that was playing at that stage, at that time. So, yeah, that's he was leading the team around for dummy half.
Also, the last thing I remember about him is the Kangaroo Tours, because I remember as a kid starting to watch those in the 80s and stuff, and he would be on those Kangaroo Tours, and you just...
How good were they, aren't you, and you'd stay up late at night?
Get up at 4 a.m. otherwise. Yeah, it was either stay up until the 2 or 3 a.m. kickoff, or get up at 4 a.m. and watch it. It was so good. But Elias was a big part of that with those early teams that were going through on the Kangaroo Tours and everything. And even when they're playing like these, you know, warm up games and stuff, or bottom feeder clubs that they're having practice matches against and whatever, it's just great to see. You just loved it. And he was one of those players that I remember in those times as well, along with a lot of the Canberra boys as well, like the Ricky Stewarts and the Brad Clydes and Dailies and stuff that were on some of those tours. Perso, Benny Elias, what a player, and what an absolute icon for the Tigers. Great one to chat about and reminisce about. That is the podcast though, mate. So thank you very much for jumping on board. Really appreciate it. Always great to talk some footy with you.
Yeah, mate, I love this podcast. So, yeah, that's great. That's a bit of nostalgia in the game off. And interesting weekend of footy coming up this weekend.
Very much so. So, everyone, enjoy your long Easter weekend. Even if you've got to work it, make sure you enjoy it. We've got some footy all the way up until the Monday, Easter Monday game, which is great. Can't wait. If you're looking for the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, we are everywhere. Follow on X, NRL underscore SC underscore All Stars. Make sure you do subscribe and share as well. It's great getting all these new listeners on board that I'm seeing, but love to get even more. So make sure you do that. Three great partners of the All Stars podcast. Betting partner is Picklebet. Jump onto picklebet.com, create an account, use All Stars as your promo code so they take great care of you. OneWorldCourier.com.au. Jump on there if you've got a business or you work for a business that has any shipping, freight, or courier needs. They'll take great care of you with some early good rates if you come from this podcast with the code ALLSTARS. And, of course, bonusbank.com.au. Bonus Bank, Australia's best side hustle. If you want to make some extra money, take advantage of bonus bets across different bookies and use all their tools, you can do that with a guaranteed income today. Use ALLSTARS as your promo code. You can sign up for free or get some monthly memberships that are great as well with some great benefits. That is the podcast. We are upon round 4. We will have the Supercoach podcast recorded on Tuesday night, hitting on Wednesday, and another Talking Footy podcast next week. Until then, enjoy your long weekend. Enjoy the footy. I can't wait to talk all about it again next week. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go